Danny Meringue.
Dusty Bun.
Dusty Hera.
I've been really busy trying to save the world from Russians and monsters.
This is Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and Portland's sports leader.
Of course you have.
1080.
I want to hear it.
The Fan.
Hour number three here on Danny and Dusty on a wonderful, let me check the phone.
Thursday, dude.
Thursday afternoon. They all blend together for me.
Yeah, it's
I'm
a
an
Thursday,
idiot.
Bruh.
Whether you're listening on 1080 AM, watching along on youtube.com/1080AMTheFan or twitch.tv/1080AMTheFan, we appreciate you. We love you.
Yeah.
And join us in telling O.J. Simpson and the Heisman Trust to both go to hell.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. We are 55 minutes away from the all-time mail-in show. Isaac and Suk. Isaac is going to the Masters tomorrow.
Mm, and he's got a Sunday pass.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's got the whole weekend. He's going to have a grand old time. I'm really excited for him. But this show, especially with the delay in the Masters, bumping all of those tee times back.
Yeah. Now he's
just going to be like, bah! Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be an all timer.
I'm not happy for him.
Why? You don't like other people's joy?
No.
Oh, all right.
That should be mine.
Damn.
That should be my joy.
After you poo-pooed on the Masters at the beginning of this week?
Look, I don't care what it is. I'll find a way to be petty about it. Which is also the way some NFL teams are probably feeling right about now, the opportunity to capitalize on the desperation of others, otherwise known as the NFL draft, is 15 days away? 14 days.
14 days away.
Two weeks today. I'm telling you, I'm really bad with days now. I don't know why. I used to be really on top of that. I'm officially old, and it's a problem.
Yeah, dude, that's a big issue.
It is. Like, what happens if I get the thing with the pills that has the days on it? I'm just like, I don't know what day it is, and I just keep popping them.
I feel like that's happening regardless.
There's been a couple times when I've gone to go take my pills in the morning, and then like a little bit later, before I get ready to leave, I go, did I take those?
You really got to get that in. You need to get the days of the week thing.
I do because, you know.
You're going to come hopped up on vitamin C.
Yeah.
When you double dose on your Flintstone pills.
Yeah, it's definitely the Flintstone pills that I got to worry about.
Flintstone vitamins. I was a Barney guy myself. I like to eat Barney.
No, we're not doing anything.
That one.
We're not doing anything here. Okay. The NFL draft is upon us, and the opportunity exists for teams to prey on each other.
Look, this draft is really fascinating because of the fact that we are talking a ton about, you know, quarterback needy teams and them wanting to jockey for position, move up draft boards and move up in that first round. Minnesota, obviously, by acquiring a second first round pick from the Houston Texans, you're sitting there and you're looking at it going, all right, they have positioned themselves to where if they do, in fact, love J.J. McCarthy, if that's the guy that they do fall in love with, they may want to make that jump up and go and get him and move to number four. That conversation has been there. Same thing with Denver and Vegas and the Raiders, to where if they get an itch in them and say, we don't want to risk losing out on whether it's McCarthy, Nix, or Penix, maybe they are a team that kind of jumps up after that initial run of quarterbacks. As we get closer to the draft, I'm just not totally sure that the NFL circles are as convinced as everybody else that it is 1, 2, 3, and it needs to be in that order. I mean, I still believe we could see, you know, upwards of 5 or 6 quarterbacks in the first round. But the way that we're starting to filter everything out, you had Dane Brugler of the Athletic, he posted his beast. And if you are a subscriber to the Athletic, it is 322 pages.
It's a PDF.
Of draft evaluation that is incredibly detailed. And now you're starting to see, as the posturing from agents is really the first phase that we get in the draft, where we see their guys get propped up, and in Mel Kuypers of the world, they're getting their information from the GMs. As we get closer and closer to draft day, you start hearing from more of scouts and GMs, and their information starts leaking. Some of it is for smoke signals and where they want to knock guys down, but as you start hearing more and more about where a majority of these teams feel the prospects are, you start getting a read of the room. Like, do the New England Patriots at three need to draft the third best quarterback at number three? The answer, probably no.
No.
And, you know, we're starting to see that as more scouts are talking, more GMs are talking, you're starting to hear that maybe as these, that gap between three, which is now solidified, mostly is Jaden Daniels is three. And Drake May, it does sound like he will go number two to the Washington Commanders. Do we see New England have more of a willingness to move out of three and bump down? Because they're like, the drop-off between Jaden Daniels and then J.J. McCarthy or Bo Nix or Michael Penix is not as big as that gap that we initially thought.
Two, yeah.
And one and two, the Commanders are, they're dialed. It seems like Drake May is going to be that guy. But then you start going, all right, then that run is going to be on receiver starting at three then.
Mm-hmm.
Or Joe Alt being the left tackle.
Or I think a dark horse in this is Brock Bowers.
Brock Bowers, and I don't know why NFL teams are so hesitant in
drafting
a tight end high when it's like every single good team, great team in the NFL, Super Bowl champion team in the NFL has got a dominant tight end who can block and is a receiver.
They play every
mostly
down.
Being a receiver.
That's the thing is they play every down. That's the thing that matters.
Extension of your run game in a sixth offensive lineman, and they're also on great teams, they're your one or two options.
Yeah. And the evolution of football is coming back to the middle of the field where tight ends work. And the interesting thing about this is you take a look at your sorry Patriots. You look at my sorry
yes.
Raiders.
Yes.
You look at the Bears that have been sorry.
Mm-hmm.
You look at the Cardinals, also sorry. They're all in a position where, yes, with the exception of the Bears, they need a quarterback. They can solve their quarterback problem. Nobody else is solving their quarterback problem with the prognostication behind it, right?
And even Drake May, who I like Drake May. I think he has the potential to be a very good quarterback. If he gets thrown to the Wolves without a good offensive line.
And that's kind of where I'm going with this. If they want to make the choice, I think they're closer. Like, the Commanders suck. But their level of suck, I don't think, matches what the historically bad version of the Bears.
Yeah.
Like, the Commanders, even though they've sucked, they've had, like, a level of, like, stupid confidence about them because they have, like, a couple of guys, whether it's, you know, it's been a Curtis Samuel or a Terry McLaurin or, you know, some version of a running back back there in Robinson. They've had an offensive lineman or two. Like, they've just had a couple of guys where you're like, okay, you're not New York Jets bad. You're not Chicago Bears bad. Like, there's been enough functionality. So I'm going to push them to the curb for this. I'm going to leave them out of this for this exercise. And that is to say, the Bears, while fixing a lot of things that were wrong, they've gotten some wide receivers. Their offensive line looks better. They're going to address their quarterback. They've spent on their defense. They still have holes. The Patriots have holes up the entirety of their roster.
And a young quarterback is the worst thing that they could have right
yes.
now.
Yes, and so what... There's an opportunity here for where the good teams who I would think typically prey on teams in these positions, it can be reversed. I think the bad teams could really win out here in the sense of getting more draft capital, but having the balls to say no to a Joe Alt, to a Brock Bowers, and it hurts. Don't get me wrong. It hurts. But if your scouting department and your ability to draft is good enough, the Patriots can step back and let a team move up into their position, and even at three. It's going to cost a lot, but if a team wants to go there, to go get Marvin Harrison Jr., or to go get Joe Alt, or to go get whoever it is that they want at yeah. that spot, they can move back and address so many more concerns. And the same is true for the Bears at nine.
And if you're New England, I don't think you pass on a Joe Alt. Like, you have to be dead sure that if you move back, he's going to be there. Because I think that's the guy. You
sure.
need your anchor. Like, he's a 10-year anchor that can help your
If you
team.
Believe he's Joe Thomas,
yeah.
fine.
Yeah.
But you get what I'm saying here in the
yeah,
sense
I
of,
do.
Like...
I 100% do.
Let's say who's it for?
The Cardinals?
Cardinals. Let's say the Cardinals think, for whatever reason, Marvin Harrison Jr. is going to go three. And the Patriots are really pushing it. And you swap four. That's fine. You go back five, but you're getting a little something. The Bears, a perfect example. You and I are talking about this before the show when we were thought about the idea of this. What if the Chiefs package up their one and three their first round pick and their third round pick to move up to 9, and one of Malik Nabers or Roma Dunze is there, because Rashee Rice might be going to jail.
Yep.
For those that don't know, arrest warrant has been issued by Dallas PD, and it doesn't look great for him.
And this is where you look at, like, the Athletic with the beast draft thing. Here is their here's the top 10 in their draft board. Okay, Caleb Williams is 1, Marvin Harrison Jr. is 2, Malik Nabers 3, Drake May is the 4th rated prospect in this draft. Joe Alt is 5th, Roma Dunze 6th, Brock Bowers is 7th, and then Jaden Daniels is 8th overall. So you're talking about
your value scaling is different.
The drop is pretty significant, and that's where you see a lot of these situations. Where I look at it and I say, these teams that you kind of pose this as, those bad teams with a ton of holes, like the Bears only have 4 picks, right? So you look at these bad teams can accumulate a little bit more draft equity and get more picks. The teams that were really going to succeed in this, though, are the really good teams already. Mm-hmm. Because if you mention a team like Kansas City, they don't even have to move up into the top 10. If they move up into the top 10 and they get a Nabers or they get a Roma Dunze at 9 with Chicago and they give up 3 picks to do it, that extends your Super Bowl window exponentially.
And you do it every single time.
They would do that every single time. But think of it in these terms, though. If it's not even moving up into the top 10, right? Think of the teams that are a little bit lower, right? If you're looking at that run of 11, 12, 13, Minnesota, Denver, Vegas.
Yep.
If those guys are all sitting there and they're thinking, they're taking a lay of the land and looking behind them, which teams are going to be quarterback needy and want to draft a quarterback? Probably Seattle sitting at 16. Mm-hmm. If they do fall in love with the quarterback, I don't think they go quarterback in the first round. But that's the one that you kind of squint at. Other than that, the Colts aren't going to do it. The Jags aren't going to do it. The Bengals aren't going to do it. The Rams aren't going to do it. You know, you're looking back and you can say, we can fall back a bunch of spots and say, all right, is 12 too high for Bo Nix? Yes. If you're Denver, then move back. If Kansas City jumps from 32 up to 12, okay, and they get the 4th best receiver in this draft. Right now, the 4th best receiver is Brian Thomas Jr. He's rated as the 15th best prospect in this draft. And so you're sitting there and you can make that move up, and it doesn't even have to be a Dunze or Nabers. You put, if you put Bryant on that roster, Brian Thomas Jr., if you put him on that roster, they all automatically open up that window and they get a game-changing wide receiver. Yeah. He's really damn good. And you can move up and you can go and get him. They're saying he's a mid-round pick. Philadelphia, right? Philly needs help in their secondary like nobody's business. If they move up from 22 and a quarterback if you're the Vegas Raiders, and you say, we want to acquire some more picks. We don't even feel like we need to use a first-round pick on Michael Penix Jr., but if we can pick up that 22nd pick and maybe we can haul a second-rounder with it or a third-rounder with it, we can go get another guy where we can fill some gaps. And in the second round, we can go ahead and take Penix if we do, in fact, love Michael Penix Jr. These are where you're now starting to see that separation where these good teams that are already good are going to get so much better if they just trade up in this draft because of the wealth of talent at positions like wide receiver.
At tackle.
You can get the number one corner in the mid-teens of this draft if you're the Eagles. You could do that and move up. And then we're all talking about who's going to move up into the top 10. Those teams that move from the bottom of the first round up into, you know, the teens or just right outside of it at 11, 12, you're going to be in such a good position, and there's going to be value to be had if you go and do that, because these other teams, they have so many other holes to fill. If you're Denver, why wouldn't you entertain those possibilities? And that's where we are in that draft process now.
And this is what I was talking about last week with as it pertains to Denver and Las Vegas in particular. Can you just bite the bullet and tell your owner, look, man, the quarterbacks here aren't great. We can't do this. Yeah. We have too many holes. Let me throw Aiden O'Connell and I don't give a damn who else out there off the free agent market out there. Let them die back there. They're not our quarterbacks. Let them die. We don't care. Let's worry about getting everything else. Because you look at this, if you're going to go by this as a talent evaluation period, the top 100 prospects they have graded in here. Bo Nix grades out as 44th, Michael Penix Jr. at 52nd.
Yep. But if you take Nix at 32, right? If you're the Denver Broncos, you take Bo Nix at 30. If you trade with the Kansas City Chiefs, mm-hmm. which I doubt they would ever do
in division,
never going to happen. But say it's not Kansas City. Say you go down and you say San Francisco or Baltimore, right? Who are at 30 and 31 respectively.
Hey, maybe Arizona likes something there.
And then,
maybe they want to move up and go get a guy because they have two.
They're
first
at
round
27th.
Picks.
You know, then you make that move. If you take him at the back end of that first round, okay,
it's easier
your,
pill to swallow.
Your risk is not as high because the slotting of positions, he's not going to be paid exorbitantly.
It's the cheapest fifth-year option you can get.
And then you get that fifth-year option. Mm-hmm. It's not viewed as a reach. No. 12 is a reach.
It's a reach.
It is a reach there. And then that comes with heightened expectations, the pressure that comes with it. Look at Lamar Jackson. When the Baltimore Ravens traded into that 32nd pick in the first round, they picked Lamar Jackson, mm-hmm. and everybody's like, that might be a little bit of a reach. But you know what? They got the fifth-year option on him. They had him pegged as a guy who fits our system, fits our style, and we can maximize his talent, and they've done that. They've done that in spades. Lamar Jackson is a bona fide star, but what it took was them moving into that second from the second round back up into the first round to make that happen. If you're Denver, you can alleviate a lot of that stress by just moving back down in that first round and acquiring more picks that you can use in a deep draft on whether it's offensive line, they have so many holes that they can use. I think that we are going to see Denver really pull back. They need a quarterback. And Bo Nix works in Sean Payton's mm-hmm. system. He 100% does because.
But how many teams are going to chase Bo? And it has nothing to do
none.
With Bo. As
That's
I'm
right.
saying, so just keep falling back.
It is a system fit.
Yeah. And I just.
Look. But taking him in the first round does make sense
it
because
does.
Of the fifth year option. 12 is a little high.
I think you target the final four high. Picks. Let's say you trade back. Let's use this exercise for Denver. You trade back, but you get out of the first round, but you get 2 seconds back in this draft. Okay. Or 2 seconds and a third, whatever the point value is, but you don't have a first. Let's just say you don't have a first.
You move out of the first round altogether.
But or this year, maybe it's a first next year. But let's say you get to those bottom four picks and your guy's still there and you have the capital that you just gained to get back in while still earning capital.
Yeah.
Then you can do it. But let's say you get there and he's still there and he's still there. And he's still there. And he's still there. And you're like, oh, we can wait on this even longer.
And there's obvious motivation for those teams in the back half of this first round, especially whether, you know, they need cheap stars that mm-hmm. they can plug and play right away. And I think we will see a lot of movement in this draft based on where some of these guys' evaluations are finalized, mm-hmm. where the pecking order is, and like, the thing that stuck out in this is the gap between, you mentioned Nix and Penix. Nix was at 44. Penix was at 52, mm-hmm. right? And I think when we watch Washington, you're sitting there going like, how in the world does that make sense? I've been saying this, like, Michael Penix, he had his accuracy issues on this short and in the middle of the field. He had those issues.
He also has the medical red flags.
He was slow to get there.
Yep.
And that doesn't fit everybody.
No.
Right? Dude has an incredible amount of
arm talent.
Arrogance yeah. in his arm.
Yes.
And that's a good thing.
Yes.
You like that.
He can put that thing anywhere.
And he delivered when it meant the most for his team. But at the same time, like, it delivered when it meant most. Those are things that it's interceptions. Mm-hmm. It's you're out of games yep. in the NFL. It's a short window that you need to do. And like everybody that wants to knock Bo for being check down Charlie, Sean Payton loves that.
Loves that. He loves check down Charlie.
Would love it. And his question isn't, does he have the arm strength to do it? It's a downfield accuracy. There's a guy who can say, I can tweak his mechanics enough.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not major tweaks that you're making with Bo. It's, I can do it.
Sure.
I can do it. And Sean Payton
quarterback doctored
will think
up.
He can do it.
All right, coming up next, well, some other folks that are hoping that they can figure it out. What the hell's going on at Kentucky?
Nobody get to that wants and that more. Blue blood.
Here on Danny and Dusty, Danny the Fan.
I like to eat Barney.
This is Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and Portland's sports leader, 1080, The Fan.
How's the Nike Hoops on yesterday? And a big topic of discussion among scouts and execs and folks that work at the college levels and evaluators was the sudden leave, dismissal, agreed upon removal of Coach Cal at Kentucky and moving to Arkansas. And what that would mean for college basketball, but there was two Kentucky commits in the building in Jaden Quintens and Boogie Fland.
Oh.
And like I said earlier, Boogie is a guy who stood out immediately. He's like, I think he's going to be a guy that's going to open some eyes this year in college basketball. It sounds like he is definitely not going to end up going to Kentucky. There have been a bunch of Kentucky transfers already.
Arkansas, come on down.
Yeah, we've already talked about how Coach Callis said there's nobody at Arkansas. There is no team. There's also no coach at Kentucky, as Baylor's Scott Drew has said, nah, which also pertains to the Hoop Summit, because one of the top prospects in this class, VJ Edgecombe, is committed to Baylor.
Well, and Dan Hurley, like, vehemently said no.
No.
No. He almost went full James Franklin on this son of a gun.
No. No. Strong no. Like, yeah. No.
Like, no. Scott Drew's been at Baylor for a long time. He's won a national title there. Yeah. He does have ties to Kentucky through their AD. They have long history, but Drew's been at Baylor for a long time. He's got, like, 700 games? 21 years now.
How long till Kentucky pulls the – that's not even the Drew we were talking to.
Was,
we
wanted Bryce Drew
at Grand Canyon. We saw what he did at Grand Canyon. We were thrilled by it. Because, look, this is a blue blood program.
And they don't hire nobodies.
That nobody wants this shade of blue in the blue bloods
right
now. The Kentucky Wildcats are facing a harsh realization that a lot of programs will go through this where
Alabama,
you sit there and you go
– Saban.
Yeah, but yeah, and that, again, their fan base will tell you, Kalen DeBoer was number one the whole time.
Mm-hmm. He wasn't. He was,
but the hiring cycle kind of showed us that it was Mike Norvell was their number one, and that they did reach out to Dan Lanning, and they did have conversations with a lot of other people, and they were like, God, those conversations are had, and Kalen DeBoer's a fine coach. He's a great coach.
Remember how Dabo was going to follow Saban directly?
That's right. He was going to go right on down to Clemson. We're going to just keep on rolling on through. But
roll tide.
This is a one thing that you have with Cal was, one, his personality was so big, and he was the Kentucky program, right? He was bringing in all these NBA players. They want guys who can win, and that's the thing, is that the next head coach at Kentucky, you have got to recruit at an insanely high level because that's the expectation of their fan base, and
but
because they
win.
Believe it is Kentucky, and you have to win. And that is easier said than done. And right now in the world of college basketball, you look at guys like Scott Drew or Dan Hurley, they're going the Dan Lanning route where the grass isn't always greener. And if you are a coach at UConn where you have six national titles and you can do whatever the hell you want because you have solidified yourself after back-to-back national titles as you are that guy. Jim Calhoun built that program. Dan Hurley is making the monster churn even more. He's not going to leave. The grass isn't always greener for a lot of these guys. And I, for one, I like to see it. I like to see the fact that you have coaches now that they're not just going to chase that blue blood program and the recognition of it. There are certainly, and there always will be guys that do that. And like Kalen DeBoer, again, is a fantastic coach, but he's not afraid of going and running to that job because that's what he is. He's a guy who's bounced around a lot over his career. You look at DeBoer, 5 years is an eternity for him in his coaching career. But with Kentucky, and as it pertains to Kentucky, this is a shot to the gut of their fans. Yesterday, Rust was reading a tweet that there was a fan, a Kentucky fan, after Scott Drew posted that photo of him at a Mexican joint, called the Mexican restaurant, and got Drew on the phone and said, "We need you at Kentucky." What? Their fan base is rabid.
It just means more.
It just means more there. And Nate Oates said no, too. We didn't say that about Alabama. Alabama's coach, Nate Oates, has already said, nah. Well, Hurley,
His buyout clause got escalated. He's not going anywhere anytime soon.
What, $18.5 million? Yeah. And Scott Drew's going, mm-mm. Now you look at, all right, who is that guy who wants that Kentucky job? And look, this text says, I'd love to see Altman get a shot. Dana Altman. I don't know if that is the fit for Dana Altman anymore, because you have to recruit nothing but five stars, and where's he been best at?
He does the chip on his shoulder,
squeeze the juice,
JUCO, late development guy. Like I think Altman's a hell of a coach. I know I get the anti-Oregon sentiment because I play into it. I think Altman is a very, very good coach. I think he's a terrible recruiter of top-end talent. I think he does awful with the five stars. Absolutely unequivocally. His record with five stars is atrocious. It's one of the worst in Power 5 basketball. His record with just dudes, unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable. Like, go be the Shaka Smart. Yeah. Go, like, that is, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that, except if you're at Kentucky, because they want shiny and wins.
And I think, you know, Tony Stubblefield, who just got fired at DePaul, he rejoined the staff. We didn't really talk about that. They made that official yesterday. That's another guy who is, as his lead assistant, really good at evaluating that talent, the chip on the shoulder guys, and squeezing that juice out of them.
The Jay Wrights, the Shaka Smarts, the Tom Crean's, the Dana Altman's, like that is a lane to kill in. The five-star lane is a really, really difficult spot to live in. Number one, they're kids.
Yeah.
And when you do that constantly, you're gonna get some duds.
I wonder, you know, how many more times we'll see the Roy Williams jumping from Kansas after a national runner-up to go to North Carolina, right?
Yeah.
Like, how many more times will we see that? Because, you know, whether it's Coach K grooming his guy and handing it off to him, or, you know, that's what UConn did with Kevin Ollie. They won a title. It went sideways. They went and hired Dan Hurley from Rhode Island. Like, I wonder how many times we're going to see the guy jump from blue blood to blue blood, or great program to another great program, because money isn't the option anymore.
Yeah.
Everybody in the SEC has a buttload of cash. Everybody in the Big Ten has a buttload of cash.
Paid.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see where Kentucky ends up going here. We're right on time as usual. And so coming up next, we'll dive into some stuff. But first, here's the Big Kahuna Support Center update.
You ever had a Big Kahuna burger?
Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and 1080 The Fan.
I hate to pile on, but, well, it's happening. So, Oregon State women's basketball team, after their incredible run, are getting gutted in the transfer portal. On top of Talia von Olhoeffen, Tamia Gardner, and Adley Blaylock all hitting the transfer portal, you now have tournament star freshman for Oregon State, Donovan Hunter, and I'm forgetting one other.
Lily Hansford.
Lily Hansford. So five players.
Nope, six.
Six, excuse me.
You have six.
Six. And that doesn't include what is presumed Reagan Beers.
You have six players entering the portal for Oregon State women after an incredible run, and then that leaves them with seven players on the roster remaining. For Scott Ruick's crew. And
that's just, like, they couldn't keep that together, man. Like, I know they're not in a big conference, but go run through the WCC.
This is tough, man.
Go be the number one seed in the WCC. Find a way to get the money to keep them together and keep you afloat, for the love of God.
Well, in Hansford, this one hurts because she was dead-eye three-point shooter for them. I mean, now you're losing your punches and your counter punches. And Reagan Beer's the last one standing. And I mean, we'll kind of see how long that one is for. I mean, at this point, that's the way you got to be looking at this and addressing it. And like, look, things just aren't good for Oregon State right now in any regard. I saw Trent Bray had an impromptu press conference today addressing the Damian Martinez situation and saying, you know, we tried to keep him, we tried to talk him back into it, but he was dead set on leaving. There are rumors of where he will land. And look, I mean, for folks that want to say he's just chasing money, you know, if the Ole Miss rumor is true, that's a great fit for him. Go play in Lane Kiffin's system.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, go do it.
Both can be true. SEC. It could be, number one, a better place for you, the SEC. Number two, a better system for you, Ole Miss. Number three,
good
on a really good team. Number four, being paid as much or more. Like, I don't.
More.
Again, everyone's like, well, what about the loyalty? It wasn't about the money. Oregon State fan, I'm not trying to kick you while you're down. You just don't have a selling point. You've got nothing. You've got nothing to sell here.
That's tough.
And that's the awful thing. And on the women's basketball side, your selling point was you were this close.
Yeah.
And none of them were seniors. You run it back.
Played a hell of a game against South Carolina. Hell of a game against South Carolina.
You are, Dawn Staley flat out said it. This is a team that is going to be a force. This is a team that could be a national title team going forward.
And what sucks is,
and they couldn't keep it together.
At what point, you know, if, and I don't, again, I don't think he's wired this way, but at what point does Scott Ruick start taking a look at the room and the landscape?
I mean, we didn't think Jonathan Smith was wired that way.
Yeah. And, you know, women's basketball is different. Ruick is different, as he is a born and raised Oregonian,
mm-hmm.
went to Oregon State. I don't, and there's no rumors that he is leaving.
No, but you start wondering just because of how.
And there's no great jobs open either. Like, you know, Tennessee was filled. Stanford is promoting, and so promoting from within. So, you know, you have that going for you, which is nice. But then you just got to take, all right, if not this year, is it next? And that's a, I feel for B fans, man.
Yeah. Well, speaking of coming up next, we'll get you ready and primed for the most, I don't know, adventurous Isaac Rob we've ever seen here on Danny the Fan.
Yeah.
Coming up next here on Danny and Dusty, Danny the Fan.
Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and 1080 The Fan.
I don't know if this is the best or the worst thing somebody's ever done for somebody.
Oh.
But one guy decided to have a little master's party where he bought $50 tickets.
Good friend.
For his friend on outright futures on Rory McIlroy to win the Masters.
Oh, old Roar, huh?
Basically just hooking a main line of drugs straight to all of his visitors' veins.
Okay. Rory, 200 today. He's 200 today.
Let's see what happens on Saturday when he has them all come over for those tickets and has them go absolutely sideways as he goes sideways.
Yeah, don't worry about that. I had a buddy that was at the Masters when Rory had his Sunday meltdown, and he said it was one of the saddest things to watch. I think, was it Danny Willett that won that year? I think Danny Willett won, but he said it was just like, it was more sad than anything else. Like, you were just sitting there watching the meltdown and going, this is going to get worse. There's no way it can get worse. Oh my God, it's still getting worse.
Oh God.
And I think that's one part of us sickos that love sports. We're here for that. And then we end up pulling for that person, right? Like, he becomes the sentimental hero for us all.
I like it.
When they go through that. I would love to see Rory put on a green jacket. That'd be fun. But $50 for each of his friends. How many friends did he have coming over? Do we know that?
It looks like by the stack of tickets, a lot of them.
A lot of them?
Looks like it's about 12 to 15 in there.
See, this is why golf's a rich man's sport.
It is.
You know, and if Rory wins, you know all of those buddies are going to be giving you a cut of that winnings. You know, if they're good friends.
Or they take it all.
Well, yeah, but like if my friend bought me that a $50 ticket, and I did nothing for it except for show up and get drunk at his house and probably embarrass him and his wife. Like that, definitely not myself. Mm. But that would be something that I'd be like, oh, thank you, man. Here's your 50 that you paid for this ticket and a little bit more. It's the least you can do. What odds did he get on those tickets?
Take him out for a beer.
Plus $12.25, so the $50 ticket will pay out $6.62.
So your friend is just, he handed you $662 and you guys are just going to be like, thank you for that money.
Let's face it. He handed you a worthless piece of paper.
Well, that's probably true.
He handed you trauma. That's what he did. He handed you trauma.
I give him the beers when I sit there and I look at that stack of tickets and go, buddy, that was a dumb investment that you just made.
Now, speaking of bets, what's the over-under on the level of mail out old Rob's going
to
have here?
We've talked to him. He said he's in. He said that no mail-in today. Best show ever.
That's what I heard.
Which, look, in Rob's defense, he could totally mail it in, and it would be the best show ever. That's how they work sometimes. Yeah. Like, you got nothing, and then all of a sudden, you got gold, baby. Gold, Jerry, gold. Well,
keep it here for all of your...
it's going to be awesome.
O.J. Simpson career facts.
That's right, 4 hours of it.
Just nothing but endless facts.
Hey, we got 4 hours of power from their mouths to your ears. It's Prime Time with Isaac and Souk. Have a great Thursday, everybody. We'll see you Friday. Well, we won't see you. Have a good one, buddy. Have a great weekend.
Yeah, well, thank you.
Yeah.
Bye.
I like to eat Barney. It makes me feel good.